Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top five sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
According to NFLPenalties.com, Charles Leno Jr. leads the NFL with 8 penalties for 69 yards or 1.6 penalties per game for 13.8 yards. How much priority is it for this to stop?
I think it should be a very high priority. They have to stop this. Charles Leno Jr. has 4 holding penalties, 2 illegal use of hands, and 2 false starts. That's 8 of the Bears' 43 penalties. They've got too many penalties to begin with, but the league is calling penalties. Kyle Fuller is next. He has 3 penalties. And those 3 penalties, 1 pass interference, 1 illegal contact, and a hold. That's normal for a corner. I don't think that's a huge shock that he's got 3 penalties. But I think it is a big shock that Charles Leno Jr. has 8 of the Bears' 43 penalties and is the most penalized player in the NFL. So he's either got to knock it off or you're going to have to take him out. There's no way around it because he's hurting you. 2 false starts? Come on. Remember the snap. What the hell's wrong with you? On top of holding, right? I mean, the holding's awful. The illegal use of hand stuff, I think that's connected to the same problem with holding. He's got some – schematically, they've changed the rules, and he has not figured out exactly what he can and cannot get away with. So he needs to figure that out, and they need to stop it. You can't lose 13.8 yards per game because of one player.
Of all the players along that offensive line, which is the most disappointing group on the Bears through 5 games, I think Charles Leno Jr. is the most disappointing. And he is a guy that you expected more out of. He's a guy that, you know, is playing left tackle, and he got paid 2 years ago, and he certainly, you know, he's sort of mixed results. He's sort of an affordable option at left tackle because those are the guys that get paid. But the penalties are just indicative of the type of struggles that he's had all year long. He's not getting it done. And you have options, and you have an off week. I know they're not practicing, but you have a coaching staff that's in there, you know, dissecting every play of every game. And as they watch, it's not just the penalties that frustrate you about watching Charles Leno Jr. It's not getting it done, not protecting the passer, not really being aggressive in the run game. I would look at Rashad Coward. I would look at Alex Bars. I would look at every option that you have conceivably to make a move, because you have to get their attention somehow. And I know that you want 5 as 1, and this is a tight-knit group and everything, but at least Kyle Long has an excuse. Kyle Long is injured. He looks like a guy limited by this hip.
Yep.
I don't know what Charles Leno Jr.'s problem is. It's not necessarily health-related, and if it isn't, it's performance-related, and if it is, then you have to hold him accountable if you're serious about accountability. So I would look into this off week. I'd look at this as an opportunity to kind of try some different things, get the offensive line's attention, and possibly tinker.
A little mean-spirited to bring this up today on Charles Leno Jr.'s birthday of all days. He's 28 years old today. So happy birthday to Charles Leno Jr. You're having a terrible season. 8 penalties so far, 4 holds, 2 false starts, 2 illegal use of the hands. And we come back to how handsomely he is paid. A lot of these guys are paid very handsomely on the offensive line. But with Charles Leno, even at the time, it kind of seemed like one of those things where, okay, well, he's here. We need a tackle. Let's give him the money. You know, he's already in the building. We don't have to go out and spend any draft capital or sign a free agent. He's here. He'll be good enough. He hasn't really quite been good enough. And in particular, this season, the offensive line has been, perhaps, and there have been a few glaring issues on this team. This might be the biggest problem that they have in general, because if your offensive line is not opening up channels for your running back, or if you're even calling running plays, or if you're not giving your quarterback enough time in the pocket, it all starts right there. So it's not going to be easy to rework this thing on the fly. 5 weeks into an NFL season with all of these guys making a lot of money, and I'm sure very proud individuals who want to keep their spots. But I think this is a great time, not for us, because the bye week is quite awful. It's a good time for the team to reevaluate right now. Matt Nagy can talk about being 3-2 and being happy about it, but it's mediocre. The team has not looked good. Even in some of their wins, they have not looked good in long stretches of the game. So it's a huge priority to try to recoagulate this thing. I just don't know how easy it's going to be, into the season.
Could you spell that, please?
Absolutely not. No.
Can I ask a question? You said that you thought the offensive line was the most disappointing position on the
one
the
of.
Offense.
You could make the argument,
David said it was.
Yeah,
right?
I said it was.
What about the quarterback? Doesn't the quarterback make your offensive line better? If you've had two quarters out of the quarterback in
two quarterbacks as well.
Five games. Mm-hmm. No, I'm just saying. You had one quarter against Washington and one against against Oakland.
I think you came out of the Vikings game pretty happy with the way the quarterback played. I think you've come out of the other game with Washington pretty happy with the way that Mitch performed. I think you've come out of enough games content, not maybe thrilled, but content with the way the quarterback played. I don't know that you've had that same level of satisfaction with the offensive line. You expected more.
Well, let's be honest here. I mean, you could look at the entire offense and say it's just disappointing. Overall, quarterback, offensive line,
everything. Numbers are staggering. The numbers are awful.
Everything
but Allen Robinson has been disappointing.
Yes, and that's true. And so when you look at a guy on your offensive line that is the most penalized player in the league, yes, it's a huge priority for this to stop now. This has to stop. I don't know where Charles Leno's head is, and I don't know, Mully, you spoke about the adjustments to the new rules and all of that. Yeah, get it done this week. I don't know if benching him is truly the answer here, but you do have to make some kind of changes. Charles Leno's got to get his head in the game. This is it. I mean, you've got to. This is the side of the ball that's hurting the most. Offense in general, offensive line has been hurting the Bears, and Charles Leno has to step it up. You got a guy who's been holding down the offensive line for years, Kyle Long, who looks like he's done. Somebody's got to step it up.
I remember that great feel-good story at Soldier Field when he got down on a knee and got engaged, and all the local morning news shows around town were interviewing him and her and starting a bridal list or whatever those things are called.
Registry.
It's been a while.
Bed Bath & Beyond.
18 years. I forget what those things are called anymore. That was all cute. I mean, that probably turned him as soft as church.
See,
now.
I knew you were going to go there.
That's
I love
what's
that.
Going on.
Love ruined the left tackle.
Not love, but now he got a contract. He put a ring on her finger. Now he's with somebody that's got thoughts on what he's doing and maybe how hard he's working. I will at least give him credit for acknowledging after the game.
He's eating better.
Sticking around and answering questions. There are others that didn't stick around and answer questions. He realizes that he has to get better. But again, in this bye week when they're not practicing, he should be at Hallis Hall this week, right? He should be with this great offensive line coach the Bears supposedly
Shopping for toasters.
That is an unbelievably great question.
Probably one that needs four.
I've heard it all. Officially.
Do the Bears play in the best division in football? Do they even play in the best division in the NFC? Who's better and why?
All right, technically the NFC West is still better because it has the defending NFC champion, has two teams, and it's the Rams, and they're in third place, has two teams with four victories, including one of the two undefeated teams in the league with the San Francisco 49ers. You look at the Seahawks, and I think they're the best team in the NFC right now as we speak. But I don't think that you can look at the NFC West and look at all four teams and say each of those teams has a chance to win the division five games into the year, like you can in the NFC North. The NFC North, I think, is the deepest division, maybe the most dangerous. Maybe the winner of the NFC still comes out of the North. So that's a good debate. You could make the argument either way. I'm going to say from top to bottom, quality of teams and teams I wouldn't want to play in the postseason, I will go with the NFC North.
Yeah, you know, I think it's very interesting because both divisions are 12-6-1. Both divisions have combined for 12 wins, 6 losses, and a draw, the tie being between Arizona and the Lions. And I'm not sure we know who the Lions are yet, right? I don't think they have revealed themselves. They're 2-1-1 technically in second place in the division. I agree with the idea that the Packers, Bears, and Vikings all could win the division. I'm not sure I include the Lions in that. If the Lions can win the division or do win the division or do make the playoffs, then that would make it the deepest and best division in football. But the Niners are unbeaten. The Seahawks are 4-1, and Russell Wilson's going crazy. And again, the Rams are the defending NFC champs, and they're 3-2, and they came within a point of beating the Seahawks. So I think it's going to be a hell of a division race there. The Cardinals are clearly not as good as the other teams in the mm-hmm. division, so they've got one team that's not very good. If the Lions prove not to be very good, then maybe I'm just saying, would you be more likely to take the Seahawks or the Rams? And I don't even know what the Niners are because they're unbeaten.
Well, see, that's the thing. You don't know what the Lions are, but do you know what the Niners are?
Well, they're 4-0.
Well, I know, but do you know what the Niners are?
No, and they have like that Bears schedule.
Do we know what the Bears are?
Schedule.
Honestly? Well, do we know what the Bears are right now?
We're going to find out what the Bears are. The Bears have a bear of a schedule.
They are who we thought they were.
When they come back. You know what? They are who we thought they
were.
They're
less than I thought they were. I thought they were going to beat the damn Raiders.
Their ass.
Oh, they got crowned in London, certainly, in front of the Queen and Prince Harry and everybody else. And it was truly a crowning. And that's what has made me quite skeptical. And even, as I brought up earlier, in some of these games that they've won, the offense hasn't looked the way that it should be, especially in year two of the vaunted Matt Nagy offense. So I think top to bottom NFC West, as you guys said, probably the best division in football. But the NFC North, while, a lot of teams maybe get a beat up on each other, what are the Lions? What are the Bears? I'm not really sure. It looks like the Packers are the class of this thing right now, but we're so early into it. And there have been so many things that have thrown me for a loop, especially with the Bears. I think you could call it a competitive division, but I don't think you could call it the best division. No way.
I look at the NFC West. Yeah, you have an undefeated 49ers team. You have a 4-1 Seattle Seahawks and Russell Westbrook playing well. That 49ers defense is playing really well. But the Vikings are not done in the NFC North. This is an interesting race. I think you actually can call the NFC North potentially the best division in the NFC. The Lions, they're surprising me. I don't know how sustainable this is going to be for them. But yeah, I think the NFC North, definitely the best division in the NFC.
Yeah, I'm with the North. I mean, I'm not going to be down with the 49ers. I mean, the great Jimmy Garoppolo from the great Rolling Meadows.
4-0.
Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, okay. The Buccaneers, the Bengals, the Steelers, and the Browns. Here's what's coming. Okay, listen, here. It's just like the Bears when they come off the bye. We kind of put another question in there. What are the Bears? We're going to find out a lot about the Bears when they host the Saints here at Soldier Field. On the 20th or whatever it is, right? The 20th, I believe. Okay. We're going to find out a lot about the 49ers this weekend at the Rams. That's when we're going to find out. After that, they've got the Redskins, the Panthers, the Cardinals, the Seahawks. I mean, I predicted yesterday that division's going to beat up on each other, and I think that's what's going to end up happening. Listen, the same thing could happen in the NFC North. Those teams are going to beat up on each other. But the Cowboys don't look great, right, as far as what's going on in another division. Okay, and if you're, are you buying the Carolina Panthers right now?
No.
Is it kind of the Christian McCaffrey PPR fantasy football stud of the year so far? Like, I'm not buying.
Well, he's
them.
Good. He's yeah, very good.
But I'm not buying them to win. It might, the Saints might be the best if Drew Brees is back soon, like right after the Bears game, hopefully not for the Bears game. They might be the best team in the NFC. That doesn't make them the best division. The NFC North for me.
Kyle Allen playing well for Carolina. Gardner Minshew playing really well for Jacksonville. When you take a quarterback every year in the draft, like you say you're going to, sometimes it pays off, right, Pace?
I can't do the Minshew thing.
Yeah, I definitely get that question.
Ryan Pace has made 4 picks in the first round of the NFL draft since being named the Bears general manager, all in the top 10, choosing among Kevin White, number 7 overall in 2015, Leonard Floyd, number 9 overall in 2016, Mitchell Trubisky, 2nd overall in 2017, and Roquan Smith, 8th overall in 2018. Which has been his best selection, or has that player yet to reveal himself?
Well, I think that's interesting because his best selection was trading first-round picks for Khalil Mack. So congratulations on 19 and 20. Roquan Smith, I thought, was the best player, the best selection, the immediate impact guy. I don't want to fall down with recency bias, but the last 2 games, he missed 1 for personal reasons, and the 2nd game, he didn't show up for whatever reason. He just did not have a good game. There's no way around it. Roquan did not look as good as he has looked. So I thought that was a victory going away. Kevin White, obviously, just a disaster. You call it injury, whatever you want to call it. Leonard Floyd, we're waiting. We're still waiting. Another guy that got blocked pretty good last weekend. Mitchell Trubisky, are they going to give Mitch a 2nd contract? That really seems to be one of the questions surrounding this team, and we don't know that yet. And now Roquan with the personal, we don't know if this is going to affect his career. So I'll go with Roquan by default, but I'm not sure.
Roquan Smith's 22 years old. I mean, I'm not making excuses for the kid, but he's still a kid, and he's still learning how to be a professional athlete, and there's a lot of things coming at him fast. And I am willing to give him the benefit of the doubt when you're talking about projecting his career. I still think he's going to be an outstanding player. I still think he's going to be a Pro Bowl, all-pro caliber linebacker for the Bears for a lot of years to come. And I hope, and I guess maybe that's talking with optimism, I hope that this is a blip, and I hope it's something that he can overcome and get past and move on, because he has amazing talent. He's very gifted, and he is a football player, and he's exactly what the Bears need in the middle of that defense for many years to come. And I think he'll be there, and I think that will be obvious by the, in another 5 years when we ask this question again on the 5 at 5. I think we'll conclude that Roquan Smith was, perhaps the best first-round draft pick that Ryan Pace made, because Floyd is going to, I think you can see signs, you can see flashes. He might be okay still. He might be a Pro Bowl caliber pass rusher. Mitch, jury's still out. I don't know that you can look at everything that was given up to move up to get him and feel good about that direction yet. And as Kevin White is he still in the league? I don't know.
I don't believe he is.
Call me when he catches a pass. but I think that Roquan Smith, to the answer to this question, he's it.
I think it would probably have to be Roquan as well. I'm not going to let one poor game cloud my judgment of a guy who had a fantastic rookie season. When you look at the numbers last season, 121 tackles, had an interception. He was everywhere, and you talk about his instincts, you talk about his physicality, and he showed that for 16 games last year. So I'm not going to let recency bias cloud my judgment on a player who looks really good, who I think we all agreed at one point was really good, potential Pro Bowl perennially with this guy, especially compared to the rest of these first-round picks. I mean, Mitchell Trubisky right now is nothing but pie in the sky. I hope it works out potential, especially when you consider what was given up. Kevin White, enough said there. And Leonard Floyd is a player I like. I think he's a good player. He's an NFL player, but for where he was selected, again, with the capital that was that you gave up to move up to take Leonard Floyd, I don't think he was worth the 9th overall pick in a draft. Good player, but not a 9th overall pick in a draft. So I think when you look a little bit deeper into Ryan Pace, and for all of the praise that was heaped upon him last season, talking about him being the executive of the year and all this, you're right, Mully. The best thing he's done was trade for Khalil Mack, and anybody could have traded for Khalil Mack. It doesn't take a football genius to recognize that Khalil Mack is an outstanding player, and he's going to the Hall of Fame. So on this list, it's Roquan Smith, I think, pretty comfortably.
Well, the book on Kevin White has been written, and it's done, and the conclusion was extremely disappointing.
Short book.
Short book, he gone. So of Floyd, Trubisky, Roquan Smith, Roquan Smith is the best of the bunch here. I agree with Kevin. He had one bad game, and I agree that you kind of worry about this personal issue and whether this is like some kind of thing that's going to linger on and be a dark cloud over his head and everything like that. But all you could do is wait for the next game, wait to get past the bye and hope he has a better game, because he missed a game. Maybe he just needed a a game. I mean, those to get back into it, and that was just a bad defensive outing overall for the Bears against the Raiders. So I'm just going to say, you know, you got to hope that that was just an off game for Roquan Smith, and he'll continue to emerge and build on that great rookie season.
Sorry to have to parrot you here, Molly, but it's Roquan, and just by default, okay? But I just was looking through the first rounds, and I've always been on record of never being a Kevin White guy, and definitely not a Leonard Floyd guy. But if you, like, look at the five picks right after both of those guys, and I won't go through them right now, but if you want to do that later on, if we want to get into it, you can't say that he really should have taken one of the next five guys either. I mean, the 2015 NFL draft is an absolute, round one anyway, is an absolute stinker. I mean, it's just full of guys that just never became what people thought they were going to become. And you know, Todd Gurley a couple picks later, okay, but like, they didn't need the running back at a time, and running backs weren't...
Nobody needs a running back in the first round.
They were desperate for a wide receiver. Right? They were absolutely desperate. And if you look at, I mean, the best wide receiver, Nelson Aguilar, were you going to do that at number nine? And he's just, I mean, he's okay, but he's not great. So it's Roquan Smith, and I just hope that what we saw in London isn't what we're going to see in 2 weeks against the Saints, because it can't be. Otherwise, you got to play Kwiatkowski. And I don't know why they didn't bench him in the middle of that game and put Kwiatkowski in.
Ask the president of Finland a question, please.
Did the Houston Astros err in starting 36-year-old Justin Verlander on short rest?
Well, it turns out they did. I mean, he gave up four runs in 3 2/3 innings, so it was a bad decision. And I understand it, though. I understand it in this playoff kind of month of October, when you see, you know, Max Scherzer doing what he's doing for the Washington Nationals with a rubber arm, and you see the way that they've approached this, and it worked with Scherzer and it worked with Strasburg. I get it. Why when Verlander went to the Astros and said, I'm ready, I want to go, I want to close this out, that why they trusted him, because that's Justin Verlander, and he does things that are good enough to be, you know, turn his name into a verb. When they got Verlandered in the first game, they weren't Verlandered last night. That was a tired pitcher going on short rest. And I think that what surprised me the most was you have an Astros organization that is as respected as any in baseball for being smart, for embracing analytics. And when you look at the numbers, since 1995, on 3 days rest in the postseason, in the wild card era, pitchers are 30-45 with a 4.63 ERA in 122 games. Those are numbers that they ignored. That's data that was not embraced. And that surprised me that the Astros would follow their heart over their head for an organization that typically doesn't do that. So that there's no question about it that they erred there. And by the way, those numbers, they include Game 6 of the Cleveland Indians in 2016 World Series. Josh Tomlin, the Cubs lit him up on short rest. So I'm sure Dustin remembers that. But this was a bad decision based on the numbers, even though I understand why they made it.
Yeah, you know, you can make the right decision for you, and it's still a bad decision, right? I mean, you know, the move backfired, but that doesn't, and the reasons are what you just said. Those numbers are, you know, if you extend those numbers, it's ridiculous. It really, people do not pitch well on short rest. It hasn't happened. Now, it's a different circumstance because you've got Verlander, and he comes to you and he says, I can go. And you know that you have a full rest Garrett Cole for game five. Now, if you hold on to Verlander there and you let him go in game five, and then you've got, you know, Cole coming in to replace Verlander, that would be the combination you could use. You just want to make sure you're using your best players and you're using them correctly. Where was the lineup? Where was that vaunted Houston lineup? You know, you saw Altuve get thrown out at home. They ran afoul of issues partly because they didn't get any offense, right? Verlander clearly was not Verlander, and he gave up three runs immediately. And you look at the way that game ended and the whole bit, he was a tick off with his velocity, which for any pitcher is going to be a problem, but certainly for a 36-year-old pitcher, it's going to be a major problem.
They got Kevin cashed.
Yeah, let's give the Rays a little credit. Can we not? I mean, what this team has done with a $54 million payroll, winning 90 games last year, winning 96 games this year. I mean, think of what happens if they had, you know, Big Papa Ricketts throwing money at this organization, what they might be able to do. But I digress. Justin Verlander didn't blame yesterday's loss on 3 days of rest. He's not going to do that. He's going to man up. He said his slider wasn't working. It clearly wasn't. But Dustin and I were kind of just talking about it before we went on the mics here. Would you rather have Wade Miley start in that game? I mean, hindsight's 20/20, of course. Would you rather go to the future Hall of Famer, the guy who has done it before on short rest? Or do you want to go with Wade Miley? No disrespect. Wade Miley had a really good season. But I just don't want to get too hindsighty here. And I love the stats that you brought up there, David, on guys going on 3 days rest. And it is a little shocking that the Astros, who are so analytical, would seemingly just forego those. But I think with Justin Verlander, you know, maybe the best pitcher of this generation, sometimes you do have to throw the numbers out the window. Didn't work out last night. I wonder if they'll get another chance, because we're going to be in a Game 5 situation with these two teams tomorrow.
The results show you that they did err by starting Verlander on short rest. But as good as Verlander has been, I just don't know how you skip him despite the fact that he is 36 years old. I just don't see that. Jose Altuve, after the game, was asked if you could do it again, would you want Verlander on the mound in that game? He said yeah. So I agree with him.
Based on the results, Joe Espada is no longer a candidate for the Cubs managerial job. Cancel his ticket to Chicago.
It was his idea?
Well, yeah. For me.
He had to sign off on it.
Let's blame him.
For me as a fan, yes. Yeah. Okay. No, of course, listen, Kevin unfortunately nailed it, and then he had to bring in Joe Ricketts, which was not necessary.
How much money did you lose in the stock market this past week?
Me or him?
Joe Ricketts.
I don't care.
Ameritrade taking a hit.
Okay. I'm sure his Nycor and his ComEd are just fine. Listen, what else were you going to do? There was no other option. I mean, absolutely, you start that guy. And you do that so that if you think he was going to dominate, which he didn't, but you got to score more than one run, too. Okay? And as Kevin also pointed out, you got to give the Rays some credit. And that home, you know, as much as we give them and deservedly so.
They showed up and they were cheering.
It was great. Yeah, it was a really atmosphere. Cool atmosphere, right? I
mean, no
question. It was pretty cool. And your guy, you mentioned AJ and the broad, he also talked about, it doesn't matter if there's two people in this place or the place is at 40,000. It's just a terrible place to play in. It's just because it's indoors and like.
Have you ever been in that building?
Oh,
it's awful.
Awful. Yeah, it's like a bunker. I've been in there for a Final Four. It's like being in a basement. A doomsday scenario or something. But listen, they did that so that they could have Garrett. The problem is now, assuming they win Thursday, Garrett Cole's not pitching, right?
We got a pop-up ad here interrupting Dustin on the desktop.
Can I say one other thing, though?
Of course.
Kevin, I think you're wrong that Verlander has done this before. I think Verlander has done it twice before in his career. He did it once when he started against the Yankees in the ALDS, and I believe that was a rain-shortened game, or it was canceled?
Yeah, suspended after an inning, started game three of that series on 2 days rest, and then in 2017 he started game one of the ALDS against Boston, pitching six innings, and followed that up with 2 2/3 of relief pitching after 3 days
rest
there.
So it's not conventionally, he had never done what he attempted to do at age 36 here.
There had been a similar situation.
Other people had, but he had never done that before.
No.
So he had no.
But he was really convincing before.
He was convincing, but I think conventionally he had never done what he attempted to do in this game, and it didn't work out.
The biggest issue is now you can't have Garrett Cole start game one of potentially the ALCS.
And that's not an insignificant issue.
It's not insignificant.
Because if you go into the ALCS and you would like to be, you'd like to have your rotation lined up.
Right. You don't want to have to start with Greinke, who.
So you don't have to do this again.
And you're going to have to start with Greinke. Mm-hmm.
Who had a bad outing.
And who has bad playoff games.
That's a general answer to a general question.
If the Astros beat the Rays and the Cubs have good interviews with their internal candidates and Joe Girardi, should Theo Epstein wait until next the Astros are eliminated to interview bench coach Joe Espada or name the next Cubs manager ASAP?
Well, I think if Joe Girardi wins the interview and he is the guy, then you got to name him. If you feel like Joe's not the guy and you're going to go with Rossi, then you may as well wait and talk to Joe Espada as well, or Espana, either one of those two guys. But I would definitely, it would depend on whether or not Girardi was the guy, as simple as that.
I don't know that you have to wait for Joe Spada unless you feel like you've gotten a really strong recommendation. Maybe you know him from previous experiences. I don't know what their connection is with Espada. If he's one of these up-and-comers, you know, the equivalent of a guy that's just waiting for his opportunity, maybe you do wait. But if you're swayed by Girardi, if you're wowed by Ross, if you are influenced by Loretta, if you feel like you've got your guy, I don't understand why teams often wait for, you know, the process to play out that way. If you've met all the criteria, if you followed protocol and you believe in your candidate, name him and don't wait for, you know, somebody to come a definite maybe. I don't like definite maybes. If go with conviction, if you have conviction over the guy that you interviewed, you know, name him the next manager.
I think they probably already have an idea of who they want to hire. So I think that bearing that in mind, I don't think it should matter, you know, if the Astros get eliminated or if Joe Girardi does well. I think they already probably know who they want to go with. They're just, you know, going through their due diligence or what have you. But I think that we all kind of realize that it's going to be David Ross or maybe Mark Loretta with an outside chance. But I think they probably already know.
I would say that if you interview Joe Girardi and you are impressed, as I think they will be, and your socks are knocked off, then yes, you just hire him on the spot. I mean, we have tiers of candidates here in terms of experience and postseason experience and all that. It's Joe Girardi and the rest of them. So if you, for some reason you walk away not hearing what you wanted from Joe Girardi, I think you can wait. But if you're impressed by Joe Girardi, go ahead.
Didn't we hear what I said in the last? The spot is no longer a candidate. I mean, that's done.
Oh, I'm sorry. Dustin has eliminated him based on Verlander's performance.
And David's stats and listen, Binder Joe would have known better, right? Binder Joe would have known better than to have done that. I'm kidding. I think you should talk to everybody. I don't think there's a rush because nobody else is talking to David Ross except the Cubs.
So we just want to drag this out as long as possible.
Absolutely. Also for our purposes, Mr. Haw.
Okay.
312-644-6767 is the number. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio. 6-7 to the score.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.